Hi, this is Daniel Garber, the movies for culturalmining.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. Recognize those sounds? Toronto's a movie-loving city with over 80 film festivals each year, but it's also a movie-making hub. A creative center with the motion picture industry as a major player in the urban creative economy. But what role does it play? How does it affect the design and development of a city like Toronto? Can it survive gentrification? And what is its effect on the city's workforce? Well, a series of articles to be published later this year looks at these and other questions. It's called Labor in the New Urban Economy, and it studies the cities of Toronto and New York and how they interact with their respective movie industries. One of the study's authors is Torben Wiedits, a PhD candidate in environmental studies at York University. Torben is a graduate of the University of Dortmund and is a teacher, writer, and researcher in Toronto who focuses on the local politics of renegotiating the use of urban employment lands in this post-industrial city. And I'm very happy to have Torben here with me in studio to tell us more about the movie industry and how it affects our city and our lives. Hi, Torben.
Daniel, hi. Thanks for having me.
So Richard Florida talks about Toronto as a creative city and the movie industry as a creative industry. What does he mean by this?
Well, there are a number of industries that are closely associated with Richard Florida's creative city paradigm. And the movie industry is one of the key economic clusters in the city of Toronto that has been recognized for as a driving economic cluster and as a major sector to create economic competitive in the city of competition in the city of Toronto, and I suppose a lot of it has to do with the diversity of the film industry, from script writing and the variety of economic activities that are associated with the film industry and the creative content producing character of the film industry. Mind you, there are a whole lot of other industries that are not recognized as being particularly creative, but people have creativity and expose creativity in all kinds of other sectors, and I have a hard time defining certain sectors as more creative than others, particularly when it leads to economic development policies that facilitate the development of certain sectors versus the stagnation of others and the differentiation among Torontonians or among urban populations into creative class citizens and non-creative citizens or non-creative workers.
But to put it more simply, Toronto used to have bean factories and toothpaste factories. Now it has actual studios where they create movies. It's also an industry and in some ways a heavy industry, but Is that what he means by creative industry? I mean, is toothpaste manufacture, you probably wouldn't call that a creative industry.
No, you probably wouldn't call, assembly line type work, a particularly creative economic activity. But, the film industry is made up of all kinds of economic activities that are not necessarily very much creative. Think of the truck drivers.
For sure.
Think of everything that has to do with setting up the sets and
the gaffer, the best boy. So people who plug in the sockets and carry the cables.
So, I mean, there is a creative component to the film industry that we are talking about, I suppose.
So it's interesting. The movie industry academically is usually looked at for its content and its cultural context. But you're in environmental studies. So how did you end up studying the film industry from an environmental point of view?
Well, you can define environmental studies in all kinds of different ways. And, you know, our urban environment, you know, is definitely part of, you know, a very multi and interdisciplinary field that environmental studies is, at least as it is taught at York University. I am looking at the reuse of urban employment lands in a post-industrial city like Toronto, and the various struggles and conflicts surrounding the reuse of employment lands, which, you know, it's kind of a confusing term. We're talking about industrial sites and industrial districts that we now call employment lands because the, you know, the way we define employment has been sort of diversified over the years. But I was looking at a particular case along Eastern Avenue in Leslieville around the reuse of the 629 Eastern site, which was used as a film production site for many, many years. And the conflict around the reuse involved a number of actors, among them community groups, environmental activists, and also film technician unions that wanted to retain the site for film use and production in the future.
But initially, they wanted to take the site that's used as a studio and turn it into a bigger studio.
No. Initially, they wanted to tear down the studio and build a large Walmart.
Okay. So this is a totally different use of the industrial space.
Different land use, different types of jobs. And it was supposed to be, I think, the GTA's largest super center. Big box center.
A big box store that used to be a movie studio.
Right. So the conflict around this site evolved somewhat, and I researched this conflict and I researched the various groups involved in it. And that led me to the film industry and to another film studio, which was planned just about 1 kilometer to the south of it, which was then called Toronto's Filmport Studio. In Toronto's Portlands. And the person that owned the 629 site and that operated the film studio on 629 Eastern received a contract to build Filmport. And in order to go ahead and build Filmport just a kilometer south of it, the idea was to get rid of the 629 Eastern site, flip it, and sell it to a commercial real estate developer. And use some of that, assumingly some of that money to actually finance the Filmport studio further south of it. But the difference between those two studios was a quite dramatic price point. 629 Eastern was a studio that was used by Canadian producers and low to mid-sized budget productions, whereas Filmport was totally geared towards the big box Hollywood type productions in the 100 million plus range. That is out of reach for sort of the what is called the indigenous Canadian film production industry.
So by tearing down that one, they could essentially put the brakes on a lot of Canadian productions as opposed to helping them develop.
That's right. And initially when Filmport was planned, the idea and all the studies asked for additional studio space to be created in Toronto, which was a main reason for Toronto's film industry and the film unions to actually be supportive of Filmport. But when the deal was brokered between the Toronto Economic Development Corporation and the Rose Corporation, the owner of 629 Eastern, there was no such talk anymore. The additional space got erased from the contract, and it turned out to be a replacement of apples with oranges. To the detriment of smaller scale producers and, you know, low budget to mid-sized budget productions in Toronto. And film unions like IATSE used 629 Eastern as sort of bread and butter facility for many, many years. So a lot of rank and file unionists were quite upset about replacing the Toronto Film Studios with Filmport.
So politics makes for strange bedfellows. So in this case, according to your article, the unions, such as IATSE, found common cause with NIMBY gentrification residents of the surrounding neighborhood. Could you talk about that?
Yeah, I can for sure. So there are different interest groups that were concerned with the future of the 629 Eastern site. And the local community was up in arms about the prospect of having a Walmart in their vicinity. And to a large extent, rightly so, because the amount of traffic generated, for example, by a super center of that magnitude would have dramatically changed the traffic patterns and everything in this neighborhood. And local merchants and retailers along Queen Street East were concerned about, you know, the competition and the potential effect that this would have on you know, their livelihoods.
But on the surface, it seems to go exactly opposite most NIMBY protests. It's usually bring in stores and keep out heavy industry. Keep out, like, close down the factories and bring in a shopping mall is often, or people want to be able to shop, not to have a factory built nearby. But because of the nature of film studios, they saw it differently.
That's true to a certain extent. And I mean, Leslieville or South Riverdale had already moved from a heavy industrialized area to one that has lost much of it, heavy industry, in the 1980s and early 1990s. And so there is a different future. You know, it was not so much a NIMBY, but more or less, you know, we getting people involved to having a say in the future of this particularly large site. You know, mind you, I felt there was definitely a NIMBY component to it, in that, you know, a lot of the residents felt particularly urban and particularly opposed to large-scale retail. But the involvement of labor unions and the Toronto Central Labor Council brought in a whole nother perspective and a whole nother dimension to it, which had to do with retaining employment lands for employment purposes, and not only for creative industries, but for also blue-collar industries and those remaining manufacturing industries that still are part of our urban fabric in the center of Toronto. So the influence of the Labor Council and the labor unions could be felt way beyond that particular neighborhood, which turned it into a much more progressive dimension than many other sort of more, we don't want this kind of development here. But labor tried to impact land use policy through the Ontario Municipal Board in a way that would protect other employment areas and other such struggles in the future by creating a decision that would prevent large-scale supercenters from replacing or displacing employment functions and destabilizing employment districts across the city of Toronto. So it was it went beyond that narrow self-interest of a local community to actually expand it across the entire city of Toronto to a certain degree. So I felt that, you know, the labor component definitely brought in a progressiveness that many other not in my neighborhood kind of projects lack.
So the builder of the Walmart would have said, well, look at all the people we're going to be hiring. What's wrong with that?
That was a, you know, there is another sub-story behind that. In 2004, workers at a Walmart in Quebec unionized. And after that drive, Walmart shut down the store and laid off the workers. And so on the one hand, it is important to organize and unionize low-wage workers. And it would have presented a chance to, you know, maybe do just that in a neighborhood like South Riverdale. On the other hand, just recent history has shown that Walmart is pretty, you know, scrupulous in that they would shut down any such attempt quite readily. So the local political representatives at all levels, from Paula Fletcher at the municipal level to Peter Tabbins at the provincial and at that point the late Jack Layton at the federal level, said, you know, there will be no large-scale shopping center, no Walmart, unless they will introduce some fair wage policies and would be open to union representation and so on. And that wasn't quite in the cards, I suppose.
So let's just jump forward to present day. Now we have both of the studios still intact. Mm-hmm. And who owns them now?
Well, the interesting thing about the 629 Eastern Studio is that it lay vacant for about 5 years since the decision to turn it into a shopping center was denied at the Ontario Municipal Board in 2009. It was briefly used during the G20 as an interim prison site.
That's right.
And yeah, a lot of Torontonians were detained on that site, and
more than 1,000 people were falsely arrested.
That's right. And I suppose the owner, which is Smart Centers, made some money during that period. For a number of months, they received some money for letting the site be used as an interim prison site. But this Smart Center developer also now owns the site, and Studio Center is basically also owned by Smart Centers, and Studio Center operates the site now as Revival 629, which makes the studio one that is owned and operated by a large-scale shopping center developer, which sits a little bit uneasy among many observers who fear that if the film industry doesn't do that well in the future, you know, there's nothing that holds the owner back from turning it maybe more incrementally than last time into a
big box store
or into another urban redevelopment scheme that is underway right now. You know, as we speak, they are redeveloping the site but keeping the studio intact, maybe in a reduced fashion for now, but the future still will show whether or not a shopping center developer will be a lasting actor in the film industry in Toronto.
So any final thoughts on this issue?
Well, I think, you know, there are a number of lessons to be learned from this struggle, and one is that labor in Toronto is very much involved in urban land use policy and planning issues, and that it often appears to be different actors than are actually at play. So it was conceived as a community versus Walmart issue, but if you actually focus a little bit closer, you can see that there were a whole lot of other actors involved, including organized labor, that had a big impact on that outcome of this case.
Well, thanks a lot for talking with me, Torben.
You're welcome.
I've been speaking with Torben Vidits about his upcoming article, Toronto's Film Unions Struggle Over Space, from Toronto Film Studios to Revival. Go to yorku.ca/city for more information. This is Daniel R. with the Movies each Friday morning on CIUT 89.5 FM and on my website, culturalmining.com.